Hey there, Freedom Fighters. Today we're going to talk about something that I don't think I've ever been able to get another founder to come on and talk about. They'll talk about it over dinner. They'll talk about it in private. They'll sign up and do an interview to talk about it, and then they won't show up. And we're about to do it. Issues with co-founders. Really tough. Really important. We've seen, I think Y Combinator said that's one of the top reasons why people, why their companies break up over co-founder issues. Still, it's not talked about. We're going to talk about it in this interview. And it's kind of odd, Ben, that we're going to talk about it in this interview because I literally have been asking you to do an interview with me for over half a decade. Ben Fox is a longtime Mixergy listener. I kind of connected with him online. I then moved into to Washington, D.C. for a couple of years. He happened to live there. We got together in person. He was an early Mixergy Premium member. I talked to him in person. I thought of him as a friend. I asked him to do an interview. He said no. I said, come on, it makes sense. He said no. I couldn't persuade him. And then he says, you know what? I'm ready to do an interview and I'm willing to talk about the one topic that no one else talks about, co-founder issues. And so we're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about it in the context of a company that he ran called Site5. It's a web hosting company that he bought and sold. And I want to find out about the purchase, about what happened immediately afterwards. I want to find out about the how he grew it in a tough time, and then why and how he sold it and what he ended up doing next. And I should also say that he is not currently running an official business exactly, but he does have a website that if you're interested in this conversation, you should go check out. It's called healthybusinesspartnerships.com. It's all about keeping the co-founder relationships happy and healthy. And Ben Fox's interview here on Mixergy is sponsored by two phenomenal companies. The first he knows well. It's called HostGator for hosting your website. And the second is called TopTal for hiring a developer. Ben, good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, I don't want to give away the whole story just yet because we need to set up some context around it. But there was like a January phone call from your partner at 5:30 a.m. And what happened on that call to give people a sense of what's coming up in this story?
Yeah, it was just a real breaking point in our relationship. It was the start of it. And everything just kind of kept going downhill after that. It was kind of the small explosion that.
And he called you up and said what?
Just that he was not in a good place, both personally and with the business. Eventually it kind of came out.
What does not a good place mean?
He just wasn't happy where things were. In terms of both size, scope, complexity, and he hadn't talked about it in a long time. It really
what
had just
mean?
Been kind
that
of waiting and waiting.
The company is not as big as he wants it to be. His life isn't where he wants it to be. That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually a little bit opposite on the company. It was too big for him. Too complex. There were too. You know, the finances were getting a bit out of hand. He thought a lot of that kind of stuff, and it was just wearing him down. And then he had a lot of personal stresses going on in terms of, you know, some family health stuff. You know, life changes in terms of, you know, possibly getting married and having kids. You know, just weighing on him, and I think all that kind of precipitated that. So.
Is this the same person that you started a business with back in 2005?
Yeah, yeah. He's been a good friend for, God, since junior high and high school.
How do you know him? What happened in high school that you guys connected on?
Ultimate Frisbee.
Really?
We started playing in junior high, yeah, with another friend, and ended up rooming together for college. We ended up, like, I think we lived together for 7 of the last 14 years. Really close friends. So we decided to start a business at some point after college.
But it seems like you didn't immediately start a... Oh, no, maybe you did. Was this MUHQ?
No, this was a network of websites kind of in the affiliate realm, doing some ad tracking and brand protection for different hosting companies.
What does that mean? Brand tracking and tell me more.
Yeah, so we did a lot of things around reviews, you know, putting up review sites for individual hosts and being pretty ethical about it for the time in terms of, you know, making sure that bad reviews were aired as well as good reviews. And then we got, you know, affiliate commissions for customers we sent to different hosts, pretty much every single one.
Those are so big that there were, I think, whole WordPress themes at one point designed around letting you create a quick rating site, largely for hosting companies, because what people would do is they would put the hosting company that pays them the best at the top of the list and then put the others in reverse order from most profitable to least, and they'd link and they'd get affiliates. And so you guys were doing that, but you're saying yours was ethical. You were actually soliciting feedback and ranking based on feedback.
Yeah, Yeah, we did. We didn't rank based on payments. We ranked based on actual user reviews. We worked with the host. You know, when there was somebody that was really upset, we kind of put third party pressure on the host to make sure it was resolved correctly. That kind of thing, kind of like a poor man's BBB.
What was the name of that company?
God, it was a long time ago. Web Hosting Unleashed.com was eventually like kind of the figurehead site for it, but it had, you know, 50 to 100 domains at one point.
How much money did you make from that?
Oh man, it had its heyday. It was making about $1 million a year.
Wowee.
Yeah.
You know what? No one would know about it if they saw you. First of all, you're pretty quiet. You looked up until now, until you got married, you look like a 14-year-old boy. Can I say that?
Yeah. You can say that, yeah.
Right. And everyone else is like trying to, in conversations over drinks, trying to show how well they're doing. And you always would downplay it, like be the quietest person at the table. Why? Is it that you're shy or that you feel like you don't want to show your hands?
I don't know. Like, we liked what we were doing. It wasn't necessarily about the money. The money was great. But I don't know. There was something about talking about money was just...
What do you mean you like what you were doing? You like creating all these different websites to rank other hosting companies? You love that?
Oh, I love that. I was doing the SEO. It was in like the Wild West of SEO times where you could just do about anything. You know, it's so boring now comparatively. But it was just fun. You got to figure out what was Google was doing. You were doing tests. It was really exciting.
Okay, so you did all that, and this is after you became... I didn't know about this until I saw your LinkedIn profile. Were you the first employee of HostGator or one of the first?
First official employee. When I joined, I think there were another 20 contractors, but I was the first one as an employee. I worked out of the owner's bedroom in Florida for a long time. Yeah, it was an awesome time.
Is this before or after this business that you described a moment ago?
Before, yeah. I actually, we launched kind of the first couple sites and then I quit my job a few months later.
Okay. Did you learn anything at HostGator that informed your decision to buy Site 5?
Oh yeah, so much. I mean, being able to work directly with the owner of HostGator, Brent, was just awesome. I just learned a crazy amount because even by the time I left, it had grown to, I think, about 30 employees plus 20 contractors, which was, you know, just crazy growth. And, you know, we stayed in touch after that and I did, you know, some work contracting for him for a long time. And I think, you know, I came back before Site 5 and it had grown to 150 people. So yeah, I learned a ton from him, both in terms of marketing, just how to like run a business in those early days. It was a ton of stuff. Yeah.
All right. So then you and your friend, are we not naming him intentionally?
Oh yeah. I think it's better just to say like my co-founder. Yeah.
All right, so you and your co-founder went on to start another business, right? This was a content management system before WordPress was this huge thing. Didn't you?
That was actually the same business as the affiliate. Yeah.
That was the background. You created this affiliate business where you're creating sites. And then you also said we should just create our own software for publishing our sites.
Yeah. My business partner is an amazing software developer and he was new to it at the time, but he built a CMS system that spanned multiple domains that for the time was amazing. And he also built one of the first affiliate tracking systems that we kept in house. So it would, you know, work with the host to track sales and do some really cool stuff. So that was all what we sold eventually.
And do you guys work together or are you always remote?
We worked out of the same place for most of that time
period.
So
you're super close and you're super working close, on business together. You weren't living at one point together, were you?
Oh yeah, yeah. We lived together for like I said, 9 of the last 15 years. He's my best friend. He was as close as a brother, if not more. Yeah.
Wow. You know what? I love my wife. I can't imagine being in the same like apartment with her, working side by side all day. That would be a really tough thing for any relationship. All right. What happened to that business, the publishing business that you had?
Yeah. So eventually, after the SEO stuff was going well, it got kind of boring. And so we had the chance to sell. I think that was around 2007. Yeah. Towards Christmas 2007. And we sold that to some venture backed company out of California.
How much did you sell it for?
Around $3 million.
Wow. And this was all bootstrapped. So you each, I'm assuming, got $500,000.
Yeah.
Had to pay like 15% taxes or something, but otherwise you pocket it?
Yep.
You're not the type of guy who would blow it on strippers and coke or anything like that, are you? No.
No. Yeah, I was just reflecting on what I did with that money because I remember thinking about it a lot because I kind of grew up a lower middle class kid from Arkansas. So I think like the first thing I did was I bought like new socks, like nice socks, you know, not the type of Walmart socks that like rip after a while that I always had. So yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday, actually.
How did you grow up? I remember hearing that you and your brother at one point had this mistletoe business. What was that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that. So my brother would climb these giant trees in our neighborhood and knock down the mistletoe. And then we'd wrap it with, you know, Christmas ribbon colors and go door to door to sell mistletoe when we were kids, to like get some Christmas money so we could buy presents.
And you say you guys were not super well off. What was life like day to day?
Oh, we were, it's not like we were going hungry, but I definitely remember times growing up where my mom would cry over money because my parents were split up. And it was just pretty hard on my mom, to both raise us and try to work, you know, and my dad helped a lot too. But she was just very stressed over money, and that really, lodged in my memory, watching my mom, you know, occasionally cry just cause everything was so tight.
How do you think it influenced you or your thinking about money?
I think it really drove me to make money and want to make money. Cause I felt like that was the only security, you know, you could have in the world is, you would do okay if you had that.
I have to say, it's true, isn't it? Like, even now, as you look back with hindsight, it's not like you took the wrong lesson from it. You didn't exaggerate the significance of money, but I think you left with a good vision of it, don't you think?
Yeah. And I think my business partner, I think, had a healthier relationship with money. He's like very frugal. And I think he really, in college, you know, there's a lot of times that I really wanted to go after money no matter the cost. And he kind of tempered me just because he's kind of frugal and very steady. So I know that like we had so many conversations when we were roommates in college, and I think that really helped to kind of temper that harder edge that might have produced more disaster or, you know, money at all costs, you know, kind of thing. I got a lot more relaxed about
it. Wow, I kind of admire the relationship that you guys had. It's painful now to know where it ended up. So you sold the business. It looks like based on your LinkedIn profile that you had like... You have a little bit of time. Well, actually, it's hard to tell because the business that you used to buy Site5 was called, is it BeWeeb?
No, yeah, it's Weeb, yeah.
Oh, it's just Weeb.
Yeah.
Weeb. Okay.
Yeah, it's a weird high school nickname that company.
You know, sorry, I just lost your audio for a second. Yeah. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, it was a Bweeb. It was just a holding company I had for a long time, so the dates don't line up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I can't tell then. Yeah. How long did you wait before you decided to buy Site5?
Yeah, we sold, and I think so. We sold December 2007, and started doing some SEO contracting for a friend in the hosting industry for a while. Went pretty crazy. I think as you've had some good interviews with other guests after you sell that first business, where a lot of your identity is tied up in it. I call it my like first midlife crisis of like trying to figure out who I was without that. So I think we had 10 months. Yeah. Cause we closed on the Site5 business in October 2008, when you can imagine the world was going crazy.
Yeah. It was an awful time to buy anything. Why buy a hosting company at all?
Yeah, we were very frustrated because we were doing all this marketing for 40, 50 hosting companies through that affiliate network. And we just kept seeing so many of them not really do split testing, not doing customer service well. You know, we were seeing all these complaints. And honestly, it was just the belief that we could do better, both for like the customer service side, but also the product side. We were really interested in some cloud technology to add redundancy to hosting plans and some of the stuff that was emerging around that time. So yeah, it was honestly just, let's get in this business. We know it really well. We can do better than these guys.
But you know what? Isn't one of the reasons why they didn't do well, why they didn't do a lot of customer support, why they weren't doing A/B testing, wasn't the problem that there just wasn't much money in it? It was a commoditized business where the price kept getting lower and lower, and there wasn't enough margin to hire great customer support and so on.
No, the margins are actually quite good in hosting, especially if you stick to your pricing and don't just do a race to the bottom. I mean, obviously people doing like $2 a month, like that's not going to work unless you can really scale it. But no, a lot of these companies, you know, just didn't have any concept of what good service looked like. They were outsourcing everything to India. You know, they were not hiring good people. They were hiring contractors that maybe were doing two jobs at the same time. Now it was more just, and at least in my opinion, like badly run. They were sucking out all the money for another project because they just didn't care about hosting.
What'd you buy the business for? How much?
That I can't disclose that, but I will say like mid seven figures.
Okay. Yeah, I've got to hear my notes, but if you gave it to us in confidence, then I won't reveal it. You bought it, you took it on, and then you both were surprised by?
It was kind of silly because we sold the previous business in part because we didn't want to hire people. And then we bought a company that had, I don't know, around 25 people. And it was just a rude awakening to suddenly, you know, be in charge of people, on the whole spectrum of skill sets, you know, everybody from a $10 an hour customer service person, to a, you know, a great COO. So it was a shock, to have to manage people.
Yeah. And payroll taxes and the whole thing. They have a bookkeeper to handle a lot of that stuff.
It did. Yeah. At the time. Yeah. And we kept her. Yeah. She was great.
You also discovered that there was more debt than you expected.
No, we knew that part.
You knew it going in. Okay.
Yeah, we knew that going in. And a lot of that, that company was going bankrupt, unfortunately, due to the way it was run. So we knew it was going to be like a bit of a rescue. And a lot of that debt got removed just when we paid them. We also paid off the debt as part of the purchase price. So, yeah.
So your deal was, I want to talk to the big creditors. I want to negotiate down and make it contingent on my buying it. I will not buy it unless I can negotiate it down. Is that how it worked?
No, it was simpler than that because the debt was to affiliates. So, you know, there was about $150,000 in debt, something like that. So that just when we paid the owner the purchase price, that amount stayed in and we paid off the affiliates to make sure they were happy. So it wasn't debt to an external, you know, third party. It was more to these people that were already doing a great service for the company.
And you were paying the full amount. You weren't negotiating it down.
No, we wanted to pay the full amount because we wanted them to keep promoting us.
Okay. I'm looking at a version of the site from back then. $6.95 a month is what shared hosting started at. You had a margin in that? There was enough money in there?
Yeah, there's good money, especially if people pay for 1 to 3 years up front. It's you know, it's kind of all based on the premise that over the course of a year, maybe only 30% of your clients actually, you know, will need customer support. And of that, you know, maybe only 20% will need, you know, more than an hour or two. But yeah, there's great margins in it. We also did a lot of work right after we bought it. They had done a lot of sales that slowly lowered the price. So the biggest thing we did was to totally, you know, restructure the finances and push the price per customer up. And we really made the plans more cost effective. So we did increase the price on a lot of those.
You increased the price. Tell me more, because I want to see how you turn this thing around. The people who knew the company best couldn't make it work and were about to go bankrupt. You found a way to make it work. I want to understand how you did that. You increase prices, but how do you just increase prices on people? What else did you do? Well, let's start with increasing prices.
Yeah. So the previous owner was kind of an absentee owner at that point. So he had just kind of let it run. He wasn't really paying attention to it. And they had gotten this habit of doing these humongous sales. So they would suddenly, you know, do a sale once a month and they would lower the price by like 40%. And so like half their customers were signing up over there to the special pricing that was like 3 years for $150 or something really cheap. So the first thing, you know, they had a great brand. So when we came in, we really focused on doing two things, which was lowering how long the term was and increasing the price generally by about 20%. So I think when we took over, the average customer, when you took all of them, was about $7 a month in terms of income. And I think over, you know, the next 4 years, we slowly pushed the average up to about $22. And we pushed the term down from about 21 months to about 3 months. So it just increased your cash flow much more frequently on a monthly basis and increased the price.
Why isn't it better to have people pay you 3 years in advance, or 21 months versus 3 months?
It's great. But it means you have to be a lot more disciplined with the cash you're receiving because it needs to last for services and hardware for a longer time. And the company got in this pattern of taking a huge discount, even though, you know, in the future, they still needed that money. So we just wanted to reverse that a bit.
All right. And it takes a lot of faith, though, because now you're potentially going to lose customers. And it's a pretty high churn business. Is hosting a high churn business?
It's not that bad, actually. A lot of people think it is, but generally, it's because there's so many technical people. And for technical people, it's easy to move a host. But for normal people, it's not that easy. It's a giant, giant pain, especially back then when email was more tied to your hosting. Nobody wants to disrupt their email. It wasn't too bad. We also had to migrate everybody to new servers. So that first year was pretty tense. It took a good 10 to 12 months for us to really turn that thing around because we had to migrate, I think 30,000 clients to new servers in a new DC that had better pricing. And also stable service, because the place they had been using was just a terrible data center. I mean, we had pictures of them with just fans everywhere to kind of cool the servers, and our servers would like sometimes turn off just because of heat problems.
Wow.
Took over. So it was a very intense first year for us to get over that hump.
You know, my first sponsor is HostGator. You know them. Before we started, you said you had some stories about them. What is a story that you remember about HostGator?
Oh, I've got a good one. So Brent lived in Florida, and I was living there at the time, and it was hurricane season. And I remember driving for 20 hours straight out of the path of a big hurricane at the time. And I forgive me because I can't remember the name. Made it out of the hurricane's path. I think I was up in Tennessee playing an ultimate tournament. Got done with the ultimate tournament, and I find out that that entire area of Florida we were in near Boca Raton was without power. And there was no real plan to get it back. And Brent, to his credit, was amazing and went and got several generators and was trying to get the office back up and running. You know, back then, cell internet was pretty rare. So he's trying to hook up like 4G routers when they were just emerging, I think. And I remember I went and got a hotel room, and I worked, I don't know, like 12 to 18 hours some days, because I was the only person on support, sales, tickets. And we were pretty big by that point. And there was about 4 or 5 days that I was the only person, you know, in some ways running HostGator, because I was the only one with stable internet. And it was an intense period. I took like 4 days off just because my hands were cramping so much from typing so much.
Yeah, why do you think HostGator? Why do you think Brent Oxley is the founder. Why do you think why do you think HostGator beat out so many of the other competitors who came in? What was it about? Yeah. What was it about him, and what was it about the company?
Yeah. So God, he will never give up. I have never met somebody who is so resilient and just will keep pursuing something to the end of time. And then specifically to HostGator, they had really good customer service. Like Brent cared about customers, you know, even when we were at fault, we would make people feel better just because he cared so much about them receiving good service. And then kind of, I think the other main thing, was Brent did a really good job with affiliates. He was the first one to do an incentivized affiliate program in the hosting community. So the more customers you sent to HostGator, the more he paid. And that was at the time groundbreaking. And so he was able to get all these relationships with affiliates who just kept sending and sending. And for every 100 customers you might get, those 100 customers refer another 10 customers. So it just snowballs and snowballs and snowballs.
Wait, why would a customer refer another customer in the hosting business?
Just generally because it's such a, at the time, there were so many hosting companies. There was a lot of people asking, well, who are you using, and are you happy with them? And the fact that he gave good customer service, they would say, yeah, I'm happy with them. And that would be a sign up. And that kept repeating every year. So the more, even though he's paying out these really big commissions to affiliates, he was making so much money on the back eventually, because, you know, he might pay 1 year income for this customer, but that customer every year would send him, you know, a client. Or at least 2/10 of a client.
All right. Instead of doing an ad for HostGator, I'll just leave it there. Anyone who wants to go sign up for HostGator, this is a company that's been around since 2002. Still has super low prices. Look at this. The lowest price is $2.64, but I actually recommend that people don't take that. I think that they should take the next level up, because it comes with unlimited domains. I'm a really big believer of having the ability to quickly publish an idea, and having unlimited domains will allow you to do that. But regardless of whichever plan you pick, you're going to get the same great HostGator service and the low price, and they will actually lower the price much more than they do for everyone else if you use a special URL, HostGator.com/Mixergy, HostGator.com/Mixergy. All right. So you're in this business, you're improving it. What else did you do on the marketing side that worked?
Honestly, we put all our marketing dollars into customer service. That was really it. We had a solid brand. We put a lot of money too into the interface. So we were one of the few companies that had a cohesive user interface that sat kind of on top of cPanel. So we redid cPanel so it was easier to use and made it easy to jump through sites. But otherwise, yeah, we put, you know, all that money that would have gone into marketing into customer service. I was the only person who did marketing at that company for 7 years. It was the last year that we finally hired 2 people to start doing more.
So yeah. Did you try any marketing, all this A/B testing thing that you wanted to do? Did you get to do that?
Yeah, we did all that. My business partner built a really amazing A/B split testing tool for our landing pages, for our homepage. So, we were doing things like that, but it was just him and me, really.
No affiliate deal. Did you do affiliate deals? Did that work?
Yeah, we did affiliate stuff, but we paid less. We really just wanted that to be, you know, only 20% of the new customers. We didn't want to spend a ton of money like that. So yeah, we still had a lot of good affiliate relationships.
If I go into like Internet Archive, I'm going to see that you guys offered people a lower price or an incentive to recommend their friends. None of that.
We did a little of that because that was all under the affiliate program. And you know, that drove probably 20-30% of the signups for us, but the rest was just solid brand and referrals from the good customer service.
That was it. And did you in any way ask customers who got good customer service to refer a friend?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we played that program up quite a bit. So any support ticket, when they said they had a good experience, you know, we would send them something and ask, hey, can you tell your friends about us? You know, can you post a review? We did a lot of stuff like that, but we didn't really have a team doing it.
Someone got good customer service, you'd follow up and you say, hey, would you mind going and reviewing us there? Or tell a friend or refer someone and we'll give you, I think at one point you guys were offering $20 commission to anyone who signed a friend up, right?
Yeah. And that was the affiliate program. Yeah. So we really encourage people to do that. I mean, we did some other things like, we used a third party review site, RatePoint, I think at one point, and Shopper Approved, where we would send people to leave reviews of us. And so it gave a lot of, social credit when people could go to a third party site and see, wow, these guys have 1200 reviews on this site and people love them. You know, there's only 50 1-star reviews. So I think that was a big help. But honestly, the fact that we had customer service that would just never give up, they, you know, spoke fluent English, that kind of thing, I think really helped.
You know what else? I think you guys, tell me if I'm wrong, but 10 years ago you had live chat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before Intercom was even around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And yet people in the US man the live chat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Eventually we had, I think by the end we had about 135 people in 18 plus countries because we had gone fully remote. But yeah, at the time we were 100%, I think, American.
Still the quietest guy at dinner. Am I making it up? Are you kind of I know this is not directly related to business at all, but I'm curious about you. Are you someone who's more introverted? Are you someone who just doesn't feel as comfortable in social situations? What do you like?
Yeah, I'm super introverted. I think also too, the affiliate community is not known for being quiet. So a lot of times when I was at affiliate stuff or even hosting conventions, you know, you're hanging out with guys that rented a Ferrari to drive.
Right.
Or they just on a Vegas gambling table behind you. That just always seemed like a waste to me. But yeah, I think naturally I'm just a bit more quiet.
I was at Traffic and Conversion for the first time in my life this year. You should have seen the row of cars in front, and people intentionally will make sure that you know what's their car, whether it's the license plate or something else. What else? You know what? Let me just talk about people and then we'll get into you and your co-founder. I get how intimidating it is to walk into a company that has a couple of dozen people and to build it up even more. What did you learn about management that allowed you to go from, would you say you had 20 people or so when you started?
Yeah, I think we had about 25 when we took over, yeah.
25 to 4 or 5 times that. What did you learn about management that allowed you to take it to that level?
Yeah, a lot of mistakes. I think honestly, the first 4 years, I just skated by because both me and my business partner cared about the people. Like you, I think we got so much forgiveness for the stuff we did, you know, by accident, that just because we did care about them and we did a lot of communication, in terms of explaining to them why we were making a decision. That's a hard one to answer. I feel like I've got 10 points there. I think honestly, yeah, the biggest one was we just showed a lot of caring. So like, in the early days, you know, we did have thinner margins when we were newer. So for example, we only paid 50% of healthcare costs, for our employees. And we would explain to them why we didn't feel we could pay more at the time. And then, you know, they were able to see the next year we were able to pay 75% and the next year we were able to do 100%. So it was things like that, that I think really gave us a lot of credit with that team. We tried to be very transparent as well. It's very hard to run a remote company. Just because you can't talk to anybody. There's no informal communications, you know, back channel.
Especially back then, there was no Slack. What did you guys use to communicate?
Oh, God, yeah. We used, they were using IRC when we came in, and then we switched to something else. We switched to our own server with, like, a chat client of some kind.
Chat client. That's how you manage your team.
Yeah.
And were you, like, were using numbers to make sure that everyone was doing what they needed to do? Or using something else? Was it culture?
Yeah. So I won't lie. I think we had to fire 5 people in the first month who just were not working, who would give us excuses like their dog had run away for the day, things like that.
But how do you know? How do you know that they're producing? What was your way of figuring out that people were doing their stuff, that they were on top of things?
Yeah, hosting is a bit easier for part of it because they're either working tickets or they're working live chat. And that, you know, there's a result there that you can see. You can say, oh, this person did 4 live chats or this person did 10 tickets today. And then on the server side, if the server's, you know, having problems and they're not, you know, saving it and making it work better, then you also know. So it's a little bit easier that the work is very trackable, except for like the high level team. Where it's much more one-on-one, you have to talk to them. So what we did after, it took us, I think about 18 months, but my business partner built a really amazing custom support desk. So that custom support desk would show us, you know, who was on a ticket, how much they were working. And eventually over that next 5 years, we built out a very, very good structure for the team in terms of, you know, teams of 8, one person's kind of helping everybody and also watching over, you know, a break system, a clock-in system. We added a lot of that structure in the first 18 months and then a lot of culture too, I guess.
Hard to believe you'd have to build that yourself. Like every one of these little things that you guys had on the site or in the business is now a whole company. Several. Right? Yeah. Like I think your live chat was self-hosted, self-created. Am I wrong about that?
It was for like the first 12 months and then we switched to a paid product that was hosted eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. What you're talking about with email, we signed up for... I didn't actually. I was against it, and then I'm Help Scout. But now I like it. Gives you incredible data on how happy customers are with their responses, what our response time is, who's answering fastest. That whole it's all built in. Okay. Then you get that call from your co-founder. Immediately, did things start to go wrong after that?
No, it took a few months because at first, you know, I wasn't really sure what was going on. I was just super worried about him. And I should note too, I'm trying to be very fair here because, you know, I only know my side and then what he's kind of told me. So I'm trying to be fair, at least to him. So yeah, it took a few months. I think it took a few months and then it really shifted, into, you know, kind of blaming me for a lot of stuff. And that was, like that what? Was kind of the rich. You know, like it was a weird mix of kind of personal attacks, in terms of, you know, you're running the business like a dictator. You're not listening to people, that kind of thing on the leadership side. As well as it seemed like just a lot of, he wasn't sure where he fit in anymore.
Were you a little bit of a dictator?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. How?
Yeah, it was something I really had to work on over the years.
What's an example of some way where of a place where you were being dictatorial? There's a word.
Yeah. So when we first got started, the company was going bankrupt, which, you know, I think the common term is like a war leader. You know, you didn't have time for a lot of discussions or committees because we were, you know, the business was failing and we had a very short amount of time to turn it around and start making money. And so after, you know, you have to make that transition, you know, from sending down edicts of here's how we're going to do it, you know, or very quick decisions that might only be based on half the information you wish you had. And then you have to switch over to more this growth mindset of, you know, supporting the people around you, making sure they can handle the new responsibilities. Because over, you know, that next 5 years, we might have somebody who used to run a team of 8 and suddenly they're running a team of 50. And it's a hard transition, both to get out of the micromanagement and the, you know, I want to tell you what I want done here, not you might know better than me kind of thing.
And
so it's hard.
Okay. So in retrospect, he has a point there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah.
Okay. Where doesn't he have a point? What was he saying that made you feel like this is being a little irrational, turning on me instead of being fair and being my best friend?
Because by then it was year 7 and a lot of progress had been made on that front. We had a really amazing management team, that I had built and he had built, and we had grown. So we had, you know, we had a COO, we had a CTO, we had 2 VPs in the technology division that were amazing as well. We had a chief software developer. So we had built this robust team, to do this. And I feel like those were more things he was lashing out at. I don't feel that they were as accurate at the time.
Okay. And so could you actually just tune him out and keep working, or did you guys still need each other? No.
No, I mean, like he was, you know, he's my best friend. And, you know, that's, I mean, I trust him implicitly. You know, he's one of those people that if he tells you something, you listen. So man, no, it hit me deep. I got super down. I was really worried. I lost all passion, you know, for the business. You know, I went out and hired a coach, you know, executive coach, and went out and did a 360 review, who talked to my management team and tried to get that feedback. Cause I was really shook. I was really worried that I was, you know, causing issues to the business and that he might be right. It really worried me. I went and joined I joined Vistage, which is a group of entrepreneurs who can kind of give peer advice. So I immediately went and did those things. Man, I was mega depressed and crazy stressed.
Just because I don't get it. Just because he tells you you're being controlling?
Well, there was more to it than that. That was part of it.
Tell me more, because so far all I'm hearing is this guy had pretty reasonable criticism.
Yeah, it was.
Don't hold back.
Yeah, I'm trying to be fair and also phrase it correctly, but he was going through a personal life crisis. So at the same time, you know, he had some issues with some substance abuse. He had immense pressure. I think I mentioned one of his close family members, you know, was facing a, you know, cancer. He was also facing huge life changes in terms of, he knew he was, you know, pretty soon going to get married and have kids. So from my view, at least, like, all these things were just pushing on him. You know, he suddenly didn't have control here. He didn't have control here. And so it almost like was, he wanted to manifest control over the one thing he did have, which was our relationship in the business. Yeah.
Was it also that he needed more money than you guys were able to pull out of the business?
No, we were both super frugal, and that was, you know, money's never been really an issue too much.
So even with his financial, he didn't have financial pressure. Even with all the obligations that were coming up, he was fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
you did tell our producer, look, every little thing became a fight. Like, direction of the company became a fight. What to do, who to hire became a fight. It was just break into arguments.
Yeah. There were personal attacks and then there were business attacks, and there was definitely merit to some of the business attacks, but it was like a new person. Like, suddenly I was talking to somebody I had never known. So even the business attacks weren't done with his normal style of, hey, here's what I'm seeing. It was more, it came a very aggressive. He can be a very aggressive arguer. He's very, very smart. And normally this isn't a problem between us because we both enjoy a good argument, but these became, very personal. So even though if there was a business comment, it might then be wrapped up in a personal attack about me. So it was, I don't know how to describe it, because, you know, it just shut me down. I just couldn't take him. Eventually, you know, by 2 months after that January call, I had to say no more phone calls because they had gotten that bad. And I also, it was like he wouldn't remember them because I would write them down and quote parts that he would say back, and it just wasn't there. It was just like, it was felt like he was going through a true crisis, you know, and just flailing, you know?
He was upset that you went to Tasmania. I remember you going there.
Yeah, that was one.
What was he upset about?
Well, it was part of his example of me being very controlling, is that I'd planned this. I was living in Australia for a year, and he came and visited for a couple of weeks. We did a great, you know, camping trip to Tasmania and then some parts of Melbourne. And it was this weird thing that came out of nowhere during one of these calls, trying to figure out what we were going to do and what was going on with him. And I remember him saying, like, I had planned the whole trip and controlled it. And it really shook me because I was like, oh man. And, you know, do I have this issue? And I went back through emails and I was like, no, I asked him, like, hey, what do you want to do here and here? And it was like, I realized that I wasn't talking to somebody that was thinking clearly, you know, like they were in a crisis mode, just.
Yeah. Okay. And so I see that this is becoming a problem. You then decided, you know what? I'm going to get a mediator. We're going to bring somebody in. I've actually, by the way, I kind of get how he's feeling. Yeah. Not that he's right or wrong, but I know that when things frustrate me, I get upset at my wife. It's not her fault. I know in my head it's not her fault. And I know that I should actually not, like, make it her fault. But I still watch myself do it. Yeah. And it could be that, I don't know, like, something's up where the recording's all day and the interviews don't work, or our numbers don't make sense, or why are we losing money after I'm working so hard and revenue is up, you know? And then I come home and she'll say something like, we need to plan our next vacation. I go, fuck that. I don't plan vacations. Just pick a pretty place. Why do we have to negotiate a vacation? Just pick a place. We don't have to, right? And then I get all like indignant. There's something wrong with her for wanting to have discussions about stuff instead of just getting it done.
Yeah. Well, and part of this, I will say, is like in January after that initial call, because that was a lot more personal, is he took 30 days off from the business. So he was like, I just need a break, man. I'm just feeling overloaded. So this was when he came back and I was like, man, I don't know where this is coming from. But yeah, in hindsight, like when I look back, I mean, I was younger. I didn't know as much. I hadn't been married for a few years. I think that would have really helped me. But I was too focused on trying to solve it. And it wasn't something that needed to be solved. I just needed to listen. And that's the biggest, you know, I've got a lot of regrets around it. I don't think I could have done better at the time. But I was trying to come up with solutions when he was just in a state where he needed me to listen and just support him. And like, and eventually it got to the point where I didn't realize that I made it worse. And then I felt like I had to make a choice between protecting the people at the company, because it's you feel like this heavy responsibility when you have, you know, 130 people whose livelihoods and their home payments, you know, rest on you and this going on. So I was just, you know, it was a bit of a shutdown, and then try to protect these people and then figure out how I can make this, you know, get it back to a point we can talk about it.
Wow. Right. So he was also taking it out on people.
No, he wasn't taking it out on people, but like that behavior
would hurt the business that would then hurt their livelihood.
Yeah, I mean, right. He had a huge voting share, and I was very worried about what that meant. And
we'll come back in a moment and talk about the mediator that you brought in, what that did for your business, what you learned about working with a co-founder, and then what happened to your business as a result of all this. First, I've got to say, if anyone's interested, they should go check out. If they're interested in hiring a developer, they should go check out TopTal. Do you know much about TopTal? Have you hired them? Hired from them? All right. I freaking hate hiring. I'm trying to hire a VP of operations, somebody to run Mixergy with me. It's just taking every freaking ounce of energy out of me. Maybe I should talk to you about how to do this right. And I keep thinking, I had to hire developers from TopTal. It was such a pleasure. I wish that they would do more than that, because all I did was talk to a person, kind of like going through therapy. I say, here's what I need. Here's the way I want them to go. They ask me questions that draw me out. And then they put two people in front of me. In fact, forget that. I even needed someone to do finance. That's a more personal part of the business. I wanted them to help think through the finance of Mixergy, to help me think through what we should be doing, where I'm missing opportunities, where we're wasting money, where I should be investing more money. In fact, it was his push that got me to look for a VP of operations. Anyway, I didn't know what to look for. I talked to someone at TopTal. They helped me think through the role, which I liked, because I thought I needed a part-time CFO. Turns out I needed someone who was more about profitability and helped me think through profitability. It was a totally different role that they created for me. And then they found people for me to talk to. Then I got someone at TopTal to think through the decision-making process and pick the right person. And then frankly, if it didn't work out, no loss, because I could just call up TopTal and say, look, I don't want to talk to this guy. It's kind of awkward. You fire him and get me someone else. Thankfully, it ended up working well. That's the way that you work with TopTal. I'm going to give you guys a URL, and then I'm going to give you a URL, because I know you're going to be hiring for your businesses for the rest of your life. If you go to this URL, you're going to get the same experience. One big green button. As soon as you press it, you get to talk to a matcher. As soon as you talk to the matcher, you let them know everything about the way you work, your quirks, the way that you run your operation, what you're looking for. They will then connect you with two, maybe three people who could fit your profile perfectly. If you like one of them, you could hire them. If not, no loss. You can go back and ask for other people or just move on. Most people will end up loving it. And if you're not happy, they've got 100% satisfaction guarantee right there on this website, where you're also going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit. I should enunciate better. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. TopTal. So every Mixergy listener is going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Here's the URL. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. TopTAL.com/Mixergy. The mediator. I've heard a lot of entrepreneurs go out and get like marriage counselors, mediators, coaches. Did it work for you?
It did. It brought us back to the point that we could talk to each other. We did 2 full days, I believe. And it did. It got us back to the point that we were more connected, to the point, you know, we could talk. So it did help. But there was still,
excuse me. How, yeah. What did you, I'm wrestling with the cold ear. How? What did they teach you that helped you guys work it out a little bit?
So we all sat in the room together, and I mean, it was kind of some of those hokey exercises just to rebuild connection. Like, tell me about a time you guys felt very connected, or, you know, write this down on a piece of paper and hand it to the other person, about their strongest quality. It was a lot of those type of, things that we would consider silly or kind of hokey. But after doing them for a day, and the mediator was really good on just bringing them all together. We felt like, there was still a lot of anger and frustration, I think, on both sides, but we were at least able to start talking and get over kind of that awkward bump that we had kind of hit.
All right. Any advice for anyone who's listening to us about how to deal with partner issues based on your experience?
Yeah, I would get a mediator a lot sooner.
Mediator, I think of a mediator as someone who comes in almost like a judge to deal with a conflict. That's not what you mean, is it?
No, maybe a better word is a business coach or a business therapist.
Get somebody to help. Someone who's experienced in dealing with issues like this and conflicts like this to help you guys talk through.
And in our example, it was they were an ex therapist who had focused on the business community for the last 20 years, and they really, they were really good about this type of stuff. They had done it before. I got a referral from another friend, and I should have done it sooner because I waited 5 months after things turned bad, just trying to see if something would settle down. I waited too long. The other big advice I would give is you have to be aware as a co-founder that small changes can have big ripples. So in my case, for example, we had been living together, when we took over this business in Colorado, and I was tired of Colorado and decided to leave. And, I moved to DC for a year, and we still had a very strong relationship. We talked, 3-4 times a week. I still went back a couple times, but I think in hindsight, it's little things you like that you don't think about that create boundaries that start growing and growing. So, because after that, I traveled for 2 years working remote, and at the same time, the business is getting bigger. My responsibilities are growing. His were not, necessarily. And it's little things like that that you don't think about are going to cause problems in your relationship. I started to drink less. There's little things like that that then you can't bond over a drink as easy. It used to be in our 20s, we would go out to the bar and have, 6 or 7 mixed drinks. And there was a certain amount of, camaraderie that emerged from that. And when you cut something like that off, or you end it, 3 hours before you get up to your like normal shenanigans, like some stuff like that has long-term effects on your relationship. And if you don't talk about them openly, or if you don't add something more formalized in, it can cause so much damage. And after that, I went kind of through this year, I've talked to so many other founders who had very similar stories, where somebody gave up something or changed their life in some slight way, but it had long-term ramifications that came out 2 years later that destabilized that co-founder relationship.
You know what I didn't realize? I'm just now realizing as we go through this, you also had a partner in the business beyond the two of you,
yeah,
right? Which I knew. It was a hosting company, mm-hmm, right? Were they experienced enough to help you guys out? Were they both with the relationship and with the business because they were a big hosting company?
Yeah. So a little backstory there. Originally, the owner of HostGator had invested in us to make this deal happen. So it was me and my business partner plus the owner of HostGator who had backed us. So
personally,
I can't remember honestly. Yeah, it might have been through HostGator,
okay,
but it might have been personally. I really can't remember at the time. So eventually, what happened is HostGator sold to a larger company called Endurance International Group. And they sold. So Endurance International Group by that point was a public company. So 40% of our business was owned by a public company. And I would say that the relationship was good with some people at that company, but otherwise tense because they wanted to buy us. They didn't want us to be a competitor. So it was this terrible situation where 40% of the business was owned by somebody that we did not want to be in business with. And that's a longer story.
So I imagine that they were giving you a lot of help, servers, feedback. No, they did not want any of this.
There was one fantastic person at the company who we had a really great bond with, and luckily they were our rep, but otherwise we had nothing to do with them. We were a totally separate entity. My business partner and I had majority control, but you can see the ramifications are if my business partner, decided to side with them in some way, I'm outvoted. So it was a very tense thing where
and
we
that
did,
was always both, a possibility.
Mm-hmm, and we felt like we didn't want to tell them because anything that they're aggressive, you know, like if anything that they see splitting us apart, we felt like they would magnify and that would also, you know, cause them to probably offer to buy us at a lower price because they're seeing, oh, these people are having problems. They want out, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they ended up being one of the big winners in the space.
Yes, they did. They did a roll-up strategy and bought everybody. There's not many companies, you know, that they don't own at this point.
Including Hostgator, which is my sponsor, and Bluehost. And sometimes I'll have people say, Andrew, you should not be getting Hostgator as a sponsor. You should get Bluehost. And I go, wait a second. It's the same thing. And they're getting more and more similar. Yes, there are some differences, but the differences are becoming more about marketing than they are about product. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Because it seems like they're all competing in the end, competing with WordPress.com and with like Squarespace and those types of companies, right?
Yeah, from a front end. From the back end, you know, they are competing with themselves in terms of efficiency, stability. Some of the technologies that, you know, consumers don't see that keep their server online. There's some companies that have, you know, a bigger advantage than others in that realm.
What's the advantage?
So, you know, if you're running 5,000 servers, if you have some technology that keeps them online with only five people, as opposed to somebody who has 50 high paid system admins keeping 5,000 servers, that's a humongous advantage. So there's some companies in the hosting space who are still around that are doing a really good job on the technology front. And then from the front end, they look very similar. But that's, you know, kind of enabled them to stay in business and stay competitive, even with a large public company or GoDaddy who's doing quite well.
Who's DreamHost? Are they independent?
They are independent, run by a group of great guys. And yeah, they're still independent, doing some cool stuff. They've got really, really cool technology on the back. And they also have a custom control panel for users that's...
they do. They have a nice control panel. Problem with them is there's no customer support number. There's always ticket. If the site is down, you've got to file a ticket. And then it's like a day later, you get a response, which is tough. And I kind of feel with them. I guess they're your friends, so we shouldn't get too deep into it, but...
Well, there's different product offerings. You know, you sell to people who are technical and provide less support. You know, it's kind of a trade-off. You know, who are you targeting?
There also is like, they're not really, it doesn't seem like they're growing very much. So what they're doing is they're finding ways to like increase what their current customers are going to pay for the same service or add extra services that aren't super necessary. I feel like for a while that they were the innovators and they just kept things super clean and easy to use. And then something happened.
Well, web hosting too is pretty flat. I mean, you kind of nailed it. The bottom of web hosting is getting, you know, destroyed by like, you know, Weebly, Wix. Those kind of companies are pulling the easy users out. So you're left with a lot of SMBs and growth relative. A lot of times it's just companies nowadays stealing market share from each other.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of natural growth.
Yeah. Which is why I think Endurance is moving into like email and other things that they're going to be hosting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You eventually sold to Endurance. Is it because of the issue you had with your partner?
Yes. You know, it was the worst year of my life. I would imagine maybe the worst year of his life as well. And we got to the end of that year, you know, by July, October, we were talking. We were trying to figure out what we would do. And we spent a lot of time on that. The mediator worked, you know, with us and him for, I think, 3 months, you know, after that initial bit to just kind of help sort out what was going on in his head, you know, to tell me what he wanted. And eventually it felt like I didn't know what he wanted even after that. He wanted me to tell him. It was a very weird thing where he felt kind of lost and unsure. And so eventually I decided, well, does he want to get out? Like, can I buy him out? So I talked to him about that. You know, he was pretty upset at first, but then he said, okay, let's look at it. So we spent another 5 months, through 2015, you know, exploring, you know, can I buy out his percentage? How can I do it in a manner that's fair to him, that he gets some upside down the road, that kind of thing. And I think I got to about March 2015. I had just gotten married 4 months before. I was crunching these numbers, just living in spreadsheets, you know, trying to see how to make it work. And I eventually realized that it was too much, to buy him out, and it was too much risk for where I was at. And I just felt like this is the time to sell for both of us. You know, he was going to be financing the deal. So it wasn't pulling him out any risk. You know, it was basically, he still owned part of the company while I paid him out. So I just decided, no, this is not going to work. This is too much risk. I want to start a family. I don't want this hanging over my head and stressing me out anymore. And that's when I decided to sell.
You go back to the people who own 40% of your business. Is that an easy negotiation?
It was actually. I mean, they've been trying to buy us. I mean, they emailed us, I think, twice a year to ask if we were ready to sell. And, you know, I sent one email. I was actually on vacation with my wife in Italy because we were living in Europe at the time. I sent one email and I got, I think, an answer back in 8 hours that said, yeah, fly on over. So I think we ended vacation about 2 days early, which my wife is not too happy about, and flew to Boston and sorted it all out. I think it still took another 3 months to sort the details and some pretty intense negotiation at times. But yeah, it was set by then and closed on that deal in June or July.
It doesn't sound like you did a lot of shopping around, did you?
I did. At that time, I mean, hosting is really consolidated, so there's only a few big players. But the problem is, since they own 40%, they had a right of first offer. So basically, if another company came in and said, we want to buy, they could do all the due diligence, all the negotiation work, and then EIG could step in and say, well, we're going to pay that and we get it since we have right of.
And that's because you gave that to your friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
He asked for it. He was smart enough to say, look, I'm buying 40% of this business. I want to make sure that if you guys get a deal and someone else wants to buy it, I get the right to match their price.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon. I would say that's a pretty standard when you own that much. So we weren't following a venture type fund. This was more an LLC partnership. And that's pretty common in that situation from my understanding. So yeah, we were unfortunately locked into them. You know, there were a couple other groups that were interested. But they had to pass because they couldn't make an offer like that.
What'd you sell for? How much?
So let's see, a little over 40 million.
Oh, 40.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a typo. Ari wrote 14. Wow. That, so 40 yeah. million, you had a third of that.
Yeah.
Why are you not an asshole?
No.
It's I mean, not we had too late, debts. Dude.
Yeah, we had some debt too. So that paid. We also gave a lot to employees in our team. But yeah.
So you ended up with what, 8 million at that point?
Yeah, about there after taxes.
And then you started Press.net, which is a WordPress hosting company?
Well, that's we were already working on that at Site5. And so we basically spun it out and were able to exclude it from the sell contract. We had some other assets in that business, a lot of really valuable domains. So me and my business partner split up the stuff that we could convince them not to take. And so we had been working on this very cool backend system to be able to launch multiple hosting brands to really focus on small groups, customize the hosting for their needs, that kind of thing. And so that was one of the saddest things about this is we had been working for 2 years on this and suddenly we couldn't continue it. So I wanted to spin that out and keep pursuing it. So yeah, we spun out managed WordPress hosting business as a white label platform so that an agency could come in and launch their own managed WordPress hosting, but we run all the support and the infrastructure.
So if I wanted to have like a Mixergy WordPress hosting to compete with, what is it called? WP Engine, I could do that.
Yeah. Plus you could include custom plugins and everything else to make it more a SaaS. So let's say you were focusing on, hey, I just want to encourage entrepreneurs to blog about their journey. Hmm. So then it has a very simple, you know, backend that would only
or
let
membership
them
sites. Post. Which is takes a lot of understanding of how to code it up. Oh, got it. All right. That makes sense. How did that do as a business?
That did not do well. It was hard because I was both running that new business with a group of about six, you know, employees who kind of switched over. At the same time, I still had to run worldwide web hosting while it transitioned to EIG for 16 months. So it was a very busy period where there were, you know, basically running two businesses and a very painful one where we're migrating and helping customers move over to the new platform. And it was a pretty frustrating experience at times.
Why are you doing this interview now? So I'm obviously a fan of yours. I've known you for a while. I've asked you for a long time. You've said no. I don't know why you said no before. It felt like it would have made so much sense at Site5. Build a brand. You did interviews on other people's sites. Why not then and why yes now?
Yeah. So then I was in the middle of the business. I don't like publicity. Like, I didn't really want to be known as like kind of the figurehead of the company at the time, especially when we were hanging out in DC. So I just wanted to be under the radar. Like, I wanted the company to kind of stand out more. It just felt weird. So why am I doing it now? I went through such a painful period in 2014 when all this was going on. And in hindsight, I see so many things I could have done differently. And I want to at least talk about it more publicly, because I know it happens so much from talking to other co-founders. So my hope is that this interview alone will help one person avoid, you know, what I went through in 2014. And my bigger hope is, along with the site where I'm trying to talk about this more and encourage other people to talk about it more, is that people will head off, you know, the problems before they grow to so big that it causes, you know, to have to sell a company or so much stress and pain.
So one big thing to do is get somebody to come in and talk to you, a coach, a marriage counselor, whatever it is, someone who has experience dealing with conflicts like this, to sit and encourage better conversation and guide better conversation. Another thing is, be aware that when you make big changes in your life or in your business, that could be affecting your relationship. And don't assume that, hey, we're a distributed company, I can move from Colorado to DC to travel and everything's going to be the same. What else would you leave them with?
Do some things formally. A lot of people, especially when they're friends and they've known somebody, which is a lot of co-founder relationships, they don't think about what should we formalize about this relationship. And it, you know, like in a marriage, you might sit down and do a budget once a month. You might sit down and talk about where we at a couple times a year. And so I really, looking back and talking to other people, I think co-founders need to make sure that they're setting time on a weekly basis, not just to talk about the business, but to connect personally. Because something's going wrong in either one of your personal lives, the other person needs to know it, because that can cause a lot of havoc in the business. So I think you really need to formalize some of that.
What's one thing that you'd want to formalize? Is it if we had to pick one important thing to make sure that we don't leave out, is it the buy-sell agreement?
Well, legally is a whole nother question, but in terms of formalizing, I think that one of the most important is that you meet with your co-founder one-on-one, without fail, 2 to 3 times a week, just to talk personally and stay connected on that side of things. Cause it's all too easy when you're running a business to get excited or depressed or just talk about something forever. And really what you need is, like, after work, go get a beer, go get an orange juice, whatever you want, and just talk about you guys and where you're at. Or, you know, 30 minutes before you start the day, just the two of you. And it's got to be something that you never move, cause you do have to maintain that personal connection. You don't want to lose it.
All right. The site is healthybusinesspartnerships.com for anyone who wants to check it out. This is not the next big thing. Your LinkedIn profile says, I'm looking for the next big thing. This is just you saying, hey, I just went through something that was pretty bad. I want to show everyone else how they could deal with this if they go through it. And one of the things that Cameron Harold, when I saw him in person at Baby Bathwater event, he said, guys, you're dealing with this as entrepreneurs. Understand that this is part of your journey, but it's kind of crazy to everyone else. Tell your wives, tell your husbands, tell your kids that this craziness that you're going through, it's normal. Don't worry about it. This is part of the way that things, the way that things work for us, because they're going to worry beyond where you're worried, because that you have more information than they do, and they're taking on all the, they're taking on your crisis, and they don't know that this is normal. And the reason I bring that up is the bottom right of your site, healthybusinesspartnerships.com, is a link to a site site to anyone who's married to an entrepreneur, because they're in on this roller coaster ride and they didn't sign up for this. This is not their love. They didn't like climb trees, get mistletoe, sell it, and decide that for the rest of their lives they want to do this. They just fell in love with someone. And then as part of that package, they're on this roller coaster. All right. Thanks so much for doing this interview. I hope this won't be the last time you're on here. Ben Fox, next time you come on, I'm going to ask you why you changed your last name. but I'll save it for the next interview. And I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. And I want to thank the two sponsors. The first is the company that Ben was the first employee of. It's HostGator. Go check them out at hostgator.com/Mixergy. And the second, if you're looking to hire, do yourself a favor, hire from the best place on earth. This is no exaggeration. Actually, they're really good. toptal.com/Mixergy. They do not need my hyperbole. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you.